Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trundy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trundy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you deadly mob. Welcome back to Yarn and Circle, the National Talk Black. It is the Murray Grapevine. You can have your saying Yarn Up Strong here on your daily program, 1-800-422-416. We're going across the nation. Thanks to NERS. You can add to the conversation. Please do so. And otherwise, we've got a text number as well, 045-714-0550. And our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. We, like I said, go across the nation. Thanks to NERS. So add to the conversation and a voice for our people. Like to acknowledge traditional owners, the land we broadcast from, and to all our traditional owners across this deadly country of ours. Welcome back to National Talk Black. Have you say Yarn Up Strong, your mob. All ears for your conversation. Going to jump straight in. We've got the Mayor of Yarrabah on the line, Ross Andrews. Touch base with the brother and see how he's travelling and how the beautiful community at Yarrabah is travelling as well. On the line, very good morning, Ross. How are you?
Morning, Trev, and morning to the listeners out there.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you for coming to the program. Things are looking good at Yarrabah regarding restrictions being lifted, yes?
Yeah, things have settled down in the last few weeks out here, so it's been good, you know.
Good.
Coming out of a restricted area, and our people are starting to, I guess, enjoy a little bit of the freedom, you know, that's afforded to other Queenslanders.
Okay, and so how far have you gone in regard to restriction? Is it all open slather regarding visits in and out of Yarrabah?
Yeah, it's unlimited travel. We have an area around our Far North Queensland local government area from down in the Passeri Coast up to Port Douglas and west to the Tableland, so our people can access those routes any time.
Good.
It's unlimited travel as well, so you know, it's been good. So we do have families and countrymen that lives outside of the Cairns area, but yeah, it's been good so far.
Fantastic, brother. So things are like getting back to normal regarding to the business side of things at Yarrabah. What's your vision, or what was the vision since 2020 started January 1 this year and all went pear-shaped? What's the plan for Yarrabah and future projects on the table there, my brother?
Yeah, it's been pretty well. Big challenges out here in terms of, you know, COVID-19, but now that things are starting to become back a bit normal, that there's a few projects that we wish to embark on and continue with some of the planning that we've undertaken for the last several years out here. So, I think, you know, now that things are starting to become a little bit normal, we can focus our attention on working with community and developing our community. So, yeah, it's been good having those restrictions
lifted.
But also COVID-19 is still around, so we're still a bit paramount that health and safety of the elders and the chronically ill are protected as well.
Yeah, because we don't know if there's going to be a second wave and they haven't found a vaccine for the virus, so we still have to tread carefully in regards to the virus and second wave, yes?
Yep, we still got to be cautious around the potential of a second wave. Within our area, but Far North Queensland, it's very low risk at the moment, so yeah, we're enjoying as much freedom as we've been afforded to try and go and do our business and our daily stuff throughout our region and come back home.
Exactly. And the Seahawks, no run with CDRL, Cairns District Rugby League, have cancelled the competition. So that is shed any light on that? Are they looking at opening up the sporting activities?
Yeah, I haven't heard too much, but I know that the district has maybe cancelled or suspended their competition for this year. So I guess it's a bit disappointing on all of our footy clubs around the district.
Yes.
But I think they need to take a bit of precaution in terms of, player safety and the health and well-being of our families.
Sure.
Yeah, we're just playing it by ear.
Well, yeah, and that we all are, like I said, uncharted waters, so to speak, regarding the future, but we just need to abide by the rules and tread carefully, and we are looking for normality, but we need to do it cautiously, as you said.
Absolutely, Trev, yeah, I think you know, it's important to really go out and enjoy the easement of the restrictions, but also to be cautious, you know, because COVID-19 you know, is a threat. And we have a vulnerable community, so
we do.
Yeah, it's a bit of a balancing act, but you know, it's glad to see that, you know, families and communities are starting to enjoy a little bit of the relaxation.
Exactly. Well, great talking to you. Great news. Thank you very much, Ross. All the best to you and your deadly team there, and your family. Stay safe, and we'll be in touch, my friend.
Okay, brother.
Take care, bro. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A beautiful yarn there. Ross Andrews, Mayor of Yarrabah, and just an update on how things are travelling over there. There are restrictions across this whole globe and across this country, and especially Aboriginal communities, and there was a bit of frustration going on and a bit of protesting going on, but the restrictions have been lifted slightly, and there's more movement freely, so to speak, but also all of us across this country still treading carefully in regard to COVID-19. But have you saying, Yarn Up Strong, tell us how you're travelling in regards to COVID-19. Are you back at work? Kids are back at school. Everything's looking normal, so to speak. They're looking at opening up more restaurants, so to speak, with more numbers, weddings and things like that. So do add to the conversation. Tell us what your plan are, what your plans are. Did you have plans prior to COVID-19 and how they're looking in regards to restrictions? Are you going ahead? Councillor, I'd like to hear what you've got to say. Here on your daily program, National Talk Black, have your say, 1-800-422-416. Yarnum with the Bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumabrit Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Give me a call, let's have a yarn, your mob, too deadly.
Gala yela do te yo Maraya yela que ta me con ella acababa na la mer gualenga mer gualenga Como le guiñe que mo
To Deadly Mob, welcome back to your daily program, National Talk. That was Mitch Tambo with his new track called Love. Hope your mob are loving a beautiful morning. Hope you're having a great morning and looking forward to tackling the day and get excited about what's happening in your motion in regard to chasing your goals and dreams and do what you need to do. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, Yanam Strong, 1-800-422-416. Yanam with Bully on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Recurry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and we've got Across the Nation. Thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. All right, living in a different world at the moment, COVID-19, and put our world upside down, and we've been adapting to the so-called rules and changes and laws and what have you, keeping ourselves safe. But in the sense of a changing world, inevitability, and that we are need to change with the times, or so-called get left behind. COVID-19 could have been a devil in disguise in regarding how we do business or entrepreneur schools coming to the surface to the table. We're going to catch up a yarn with Dr. Gillian Waters-Lynch, a lecturer in innovation, entrepreneurship and organisation design in the School of Management at RMIT University, and commenting on the future of workplaces. On the line, Dr. Gillian, good morning. How are you?
G'day, Trev. Good to speak to you.
Yeah, great to speak to you. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Yeah, we are living in a different world at the moment, but blessed are the flexible is what I always say in regarding adaptability and the future of businesses and how we operate business, or if not, new schools or new opportunities come to the table in regard to changes, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, let's be clear, like COVID-19 was terrible for many people.
Of course.
But whenever there's a big change like this, it always opens up new frontiers of opportunity, especially for people thinking entrepreneurially. Mm. So we could talk about what those are, but I agree with your basic point.
Well, in actual fact, like I said, some people can't see the rainforest because the trees are in the way, but it's about having an open mind and looking at opportunities and working in those spaces or creating new spaces, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. And so one of the lines that's been going around about this is we've had sort of 10 years, what was expected to take 5 or 10 years of development in 6 months. And so we see that in the adoption of digital services. Even things like contact payments, that we were pretty far ahead in Australia anyway, mm. compared to other places in the world. But, you know, if you still wanted to use cash, that's been really difficult the last few months, for example. So anyone that was a bit ahead here, people that, you know, did things like deliver toilet paper to your home,
sure.
or deliver detergent or whatever it was, they've actually seen a big upside on this stuff.
Yeah.
So if you were a little bit ahead of the curve, in many ways you've benefited. If conversely, if your business relied on people coming to you physically, mm. you know, people crowding into a shop or whatever, you've clearly suffered.
Sure. Well, you didn't adapt to the so-called change. Like I said, COVID-19, in a way, could be an angel in disguise in regard to how we do business or innovation as such, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we can talk about that, if you like, in the context of the actual workplace itself. And
sure.
what that means for offices and, you know, routinely where we go to work and what that looks like.
Well, let's talk on that subject in regard to what does it look like in regard to employment?
Well, what's interesting about this, I mean, I guess the way I think of it is that these three levels that COVID has impacted, you know, the business level in general, so things like, you know, delivery to the home, digital services, online shopping, all that stuff was already there pre-COVID-19.
Yes.
But it's had a big benefit from it, and I think a lot of that behaviour will stick after COVID-19. Then there's sort of management level, you know, the idea of working from home and remote work, or what used to be called telecommuting, has been around for a really long time, like 50 years.
Yes.
This has been discussed, but many businesses were resistant to the idea because they often thought, well, you know, are people really going to get their work done if they're at home, or we let them work from another location? Now, anyone that was resisting that has had to conform to the new workplace model. And I think many businesses, in fact, we know this from some surveys, many CFOs are looking at the return and saying, maybe we should leave, continue to allow people to work remotely, at least those that want it.
Mm.
There was a survey done by Gartner a few weeks back that said nearly 3/4 of CFOs we're thinking about maintaining long-term many of the work from home practices they've adopted during COVID-19.
Well, Dr. Julian, they would have seen a lot of progression or more work being done and more productivity, yeah?
Well, I think that some of that remains to be seen. I'm very interested in seeing any data on this because, of course, kids were home, you know. So we do know, there's been lots of studies on this done, and the majority of them, the data is an interesting, it's a bit more complex, you've got to step through it, but the majority of them say people are generally more productive at home. Mm. There's a very famous study was done by Nick Bloom of Stanford on this, where they allow half the people to work from home, half of them to go into the office at a Chinese travel agency, and they found the people that work from home were 13% more productive, 50% less likely to change jobs because they liked it. Mm. The downside is people often actually work longer hours. You know, sometimes people's work-life balance suffers, you know. So it does depend a bit on the situation, the organisation, but generally the benefits, I think, outweigh the costs of this.
Sure. So the it leaves uncharted waters regarding the future to working at home. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what most of us suspected looking at this is there'll be a greater tolerance for working at home and remote work. You know, so many of these companies. The other poll I was going to mention, which was done by Gallup, 60% of people in this poll said they want to maintain the work arrangements. Mm. So these are workers that would like to maintain the flexibility. Of course, that also means 40% of people want to go back, right?
Yes. So
that's just as interesting. What's going on there? You know, is it that they can't get their work done? Is it that home's not a great situation? So I think the way forward is offering more flexibility for workers. Mm. And that has some really interesting second-order effects around unlocking, you know, our dependency on the cities, on being close to the economic action. I mean, I live a couple of hours out of Melbourne, and I used to have to commute to teach, you know, into Melbourne. It took me 2 hours. Teaching online has been great for me because it means I can cut down that time, and it would allow more workers to move a bit further out from the cities. Mm. Potentially allow people that live away from the city in smaller towns, regional areas, to get some of those to do that work that they often thought they needed to be in the city to do. So I reckon there's a lot of value that could be unlocked if we relax that need to be in the office 5 days a week.
But when you're looking at the so-called after doing the research and getting the answer research, the numbers in regard to four, but then you need to look at the against as well. That comes into the fray of things regarding the outcome or the full picture, so to speak. Yep.
Yeah, now the against is interesting. I'll say a couple of things on that. I mean, one, if you've got a nice place to live and a safe home environment, and certainly in my phase of life where I've got a 5-year-old kid, you know, being at home is a benefit because I can reduce that friction around the travelling to and fro from work. You know, I can go straight from work to doing childcare and my wife's happier, the kid's happier. But if you live alone, maybe you're in your 20s, you don't have a partner, you don't have kids, actually going to work, you know, meeting other people, the social experience of that is highly beneficial, right?
Yes.
And, you know, people meet their wives or husbands or whatever it is sometimes in the workplace. So there's all these things that are like second-degree benefits from going to work.
Mm.
That's one. So there's how happy you are in your home, how safe it is and all of that. I mean, there's kind of where you are in your life, you know. Do you actually want to get out of the house? Is that more of a feature, not a bug?
Sure.
And that's why I think flexibility is so important here.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, different strokes for different folks depending on your situation, you know, and regarding future aspirations in the social sense and the business sense, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. But I really do think the benefits overall can outweigh the costs here.
Okay.
And we just want to make sure we pay attention to, like, what we don't want is businesses to start cynically saying, well, you're all going to work from home because we want to save money on real estate, and that not working for some people, you know, that traditionally got the benefit of coming into work. Now, I'll say something, I'll end on this if you like.
Yes.
There is a third way answer here, which is really what I research around co-working spaces and flexible third-party spaces, which is you might want to go into an office environment to do your work, but that doesn't have to be the office that's owned and managed by your employer. That could be one of these third-party collaborative work environments, you know. And so in my case, RMIT is in Melbourne. I live in Ocean Grove, but, you know, there could be a shared office space in here or in Geelong that I could go to do my work and then come home. And so I get to get out of the house. I get to, you know, interact with some other people.
Two birds, one stone.
Or whatever it is. Exactly. Yeah, but it doesn't have to be RMIT providing that space. Mm. And that's where I think there's an interesting opportunity going forward.
So I suppose owners of companies or managers or CEO, chairpersons, need to look at all the different aspects, if not for each individual or department, so to speak. If there's more productivity for a certain department, then yes, you guys can work at home. But it all depends on the individual as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I think the key principles here are the data generally says people work harder, not less, when they're at home. They like being given the trust. If you don't trust your people, I mean, if you don't think they're going to work from home, there's probably something either going on with the sorts of people that you're hiring, the sorts of management culture you have, and the way you're measuring their productivity. Because it should be. I've had some people say, "Well, can we install software to monitor when they're at their desk and all that?" And I think that's counterproductive. I think what it should be is people are able to say, here's the work I got done today, look at it, check it out. So you need good management systems to measure the output of the work, not monitor them, you know, minute by minute or keystroke by keystroke, whatever they're doing.
Yes.
But generally, the data says people are both happier and can be more productive when you give them flexible work arrangements. But you also want to make sure that for those that it doesn't work for, there's an alternative as well, yeah.
Well, you want the team to work harder, but also work smarter. And if there is a smarter way than working in the office for that individual, then do so. But if you're at home, then do so as well. So the flexibility in that sense. And, well, we need that flexibility in regarding making those decisions, yes.
Absolutely. And maybe it's not, you know, fully one or the other. Maybe it's coming into the office 2 or 3 days a week and easing into the flexible arrangements. There was one study that said you can get all of the benefits of the office in 2 days a week. So there are some benefits, you know, seeing each other, eyeballing each other, having a yarn, all of that stuff that can be good for culture, including, you know, company culture.
Sure.
But it doesn't mean you need to sit next to each other, you know, with headphones on, tapping at your computer 5 days a week. So there's also lots of interesting experiments companies do with doing this. Like maybe they just have a big session, you know, for 5 days, you know, once a quarter, where they come and they you know, spend some time to each other, build up that trust, that familiarity, and then distribute again and allow everybody to work wherever they are.
Sure.
So I just think we need to be a bit more imaginative about. We don't need to be tied to this old industrial structure, right?
Exactly.
5 days a week, nine to five, because that made sense when you're working in a factory. Mm. You actually need to stand next to each other to, you know, as the part moves along the assembly line. It's really important you're there at the same time, but most of the work today, if you're working with information or services, or it's not like that. Mm. You know, it takes sometimes individual deeper thought. It can be separated by time and space. We can use technology in smart ways to connect us. So there's a lot more flexibility that we have at our disposal than traditionally management and organisational cultures have allowed.
But we should also travel with an open mind in regard to the world we live in. Change is inevitable, and change, if you take it on board, is a powerful tool in regard to a change is the engine of growth, is what I say.
Yeah, absolutely. It always has been, always is, right? And so the economy never sits static, you know, just like our lives don't. And you can be in a good phase when things seem stable, but change is always around the corner. So leaning into that, trying to find opportunity in changes, even ones that immediately don't look positive, I think is a much better attitude than the other way, you know.
It creates opportunities as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's what we study in the field of entrepreneurship. It's all about spotting opportunities.
Mm.
So it's called opportunity recognition, you know. Why is it that some people are able to see an opportunity amid change and other people only see threat?
Take the blinkers off of what you're saying, Dr. Julian. Have an open mind and a peripheral vision, so to speak.
If you can, yeah. And especially around trends that have been with us for a long time, like the transition towards digital, you know.
Yes.
If you've got a business out there, it's like, how do you make sure that people can get your stuff online, can access it, you know? It's never been a better time for podcasting and things like this.
It's exactly.
Proliferation of media, you know, people are hungry for content. And I think gradually, although some sectors have been more immune for a while, the internet, the way of delivering value through using the digital infrastructure of the internet, that's affecting all industries.
Of course it is.
You know, so just, yeah.
Big time. Look, a very important conversation. Thank you very much, Sharon. Dr. Julian, all the best to your team and your family. Stay safe, and we'll yarn soon.
You too, Trev. Thanks for the invite.
Bye-bye. A beautiful yarn there. Dr. Julian Waters Lynch, his name is, a lecturer in innovation, entrepreneurship and organizational design in the School of Management and RMIT University. And talking about, commenting on the future of workplaces and how it could change thanks to COVID-19, but the world we live in, fast ever will, in regard to change, and be open-minded for the change. They say prepare yourself for the opportunity, and the opportunity will present itself. So travel with an open mind, so to speak. Have you say, yarn up strong, your mob. 1-800-422-416 is the number you need to call for your say here on National Talk Black, live at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bummerbrit Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service, and that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Call the number, yarn with the ball, you're on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say, your mob.
You say you're sorry, is it hard to do? Just put your lips together and let the words roll through. Can't you say you're sorry? Are you so afraid? Just hold your hand in my hand and let this pact be made. But just before you say, this is the beginning of healing both our past. Can't you say you're sorry? When will you understand? Remember we both have suffered upon this sunburnt land. So come on, let's make a start. I will still embrace you. So come on, let's make a start.
A very good morning, your daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns. You know at BBM Bummerbrit Media, 98.7 FM. We go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. And you can have your say by calling us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Yes, we are living in a different world at the moment thanks to COVID-19. There is light at the end of the tunnel, but how will that light be? I mean, blessed are the flexible, need to change and adapt to the changes in life. But look, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Professor Paul Flatow. He's the Centre for Social Impact, CSI, University of Western Australia. I got him on the line. A very good morning, Professor Paul. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Trevor. Very well.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So, yeah, we are living in a different world at the moment. And, look, our topic today with yourself is youth unemployment due to COVID-19 to have significant social impact on young people's lives, but for years to come. Please explain how you see that, please, Professor Paul.
Yeah, so the pandemic has had a very significant effect. The first set of figures are in. And people probably are aware of this. I mean, you see it every day anyway. But when the April figures came in, the Australian labour market data came in from the Australian Bureau of Statistics, we saw that 213,000 young people, that's young people aged between 15 and 24, had lost their jobs in just 1 month. And they made up a third of the total 600,000 that lost their jobs in that month. So that's that was a dramatic reduction, and that's the biggest reduction in employment we've seen. Mm. And you've got to remember that a lot of people were still employed with JobKeeper. So if you're on JobKeeper, you're still counted as employed. So these were people who lost their jobs, weren't on JobKeeper. And obviously, a lot of them went across to Job Seeker, the benefit for those on who are unemployed. Mm. That's a very, very large number in 1 month.
So when you look at it, we're talking about the significant social impact on young people for years to come in regard to the industry that they're working in, or regard to the mental capacity, or regard to life as we know it, in regard to change after COVID-19.
Yeah, so this is the big issue, isn't it? So if those young people were able to get back in the jobs, and they're probably not getting back in the jobs in early May, it's going to be June. So it's going to be 2 months before we see the impact. Now, some of them will get back into jobs, others won't. And it's the long-term impact for those who don't get back into work quickly. That's the real issue. Because we've seen it time and again, haven't we, that if you don't get back into work quickly, then you've got those kind of effects coming in. You have the mental health effects.
Yes.
And, you know, if you've been out of work, you've got the loss of income, you've got the mental health effects, you start to get discouraged, and you're stigmatized as well. You know, so people say, okay, when was the last time you had a job? And, of course, you're now... you've lost all that.
Sure.
But it's not just the young people who lost their jobs. Remember, we had a very high unemployment rate amongst young people before the pandemic hit. So
exactly. They're
the ones probably that are most concerned, because then, you know, 3 months have gone by and they've not even been able to look for work, really, in those 3 months. So, yeah, this is a big impact.
Mm. And so when we're looking at it, like I said, it affects the individual in regarding, well, one, starting from a fresh slate, have to go back for job interviews, probably a different job to what they were doing before, or getting their old job back. And then, like I said, it forms the mental capacity in regarding self-esteem and motivation and all the above. So there lies our conversation regarding significant social impact on young people for years to come.
Yeah, that's exactly the crunch of it. And as I said, it's going to be the combination of those who don't get back quickly, together with those who were already unemployed previously. It's that combination of young people that we're worried about. And if you remember back to 1991, that was where we saw another big recession in Australia and the long-term unemployment that came out of that. So we had young people, and obviously long-term unemployment also affects older workers as well. So you've got those at the other end.
Yes.
Who really do feel it at the other end as well. And we saw in 1991, a year later, after that big recession at the beginning of the 90s, we saw this big increase in the long-term unemployed group. So it is a real worry. And that's not the only worry out there. I mean, we've seen a loss of young apprenticeships. I think that's a real concern. Mm. So young people who are going off getting their trades, that's been an impact. And remember, apprenticeships dropped as well over the last 10 years prior to the pandemic. So there are these range of concerns that we have. Some people will get back into jobs straight away, you know, when the cafe opens up.
Yes.
They're already opening up. You know, some, they're rung up and said, okay, you know, we're getting people back in, come back in. Others aren't getting that call.
So as a lead researcher on this topic, what can you suggest for young people to do to prevent the situation they're in regarding moving ahead? What can they do in regard to, well, like I said, new studies, a new area, a new industry, motivation in that sense? You know, what do you recommend there, Professor Paul?
Yeah, well, there's obviously, you've got to look at where you're at. So what we've seen is that in certain areas, young people will be able to get back into those jobs quickly, and they need a bit of mouth about what's going on. So if, for example, they're in tourism and the tourism is being affected by international travellers, they've got a worry on their hands, don't they? If it is a matter of going back to their local cafe or to other kinds of jobs that aren't going to be affected structurally by, you know, the borders and so on, then they have less to worry about, I think. But I'm very concerned about those areas that will be affected by, you know, the closing of the borders, the tourism areas. And also, when recession starts to bite, you see particular areas starting to drop off. Obviously, they were worried about areas like construction and so on. So there's a question about where you're at and the jobs that you're doing.
Sure.
But also, what we can do as a society is just as important, isn't it? That
exactly.
We need to provide that kind of support. So mentoring support. You know, I'm involved in looking at a mentoring program, and it's generally older people who are mentoring the younger people who've lost jobs.
Well, exactly. They're further down the track than their young ones in regarding telling them where the potholes are, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. And also to stick it out and to try and keep the feeling up a bit. You know, it's a tough world. So an older person who's been through some tough times
can help navigate the younger ones through.
They can be really good. So I really support those who are out there right now and can actually, you know, see the young people who have lost jobs to say, okay, I'm going to help out now. And I'm going to provide that support. Now, we not only need, of course, the mentors, but we need to have a good policy to provide jobs, of course.
Yes.
And we need to look at, training avenues, et cetera, that do have job pathways so that if we... That's about policy, to say, okay, new jobs need to be opened up. That requires training. Let's go through that pathway. And, of course, when you're, 18, 19... you still have a lot of opportunity. You can be cut out of one opportunity.
Well, time is on your side. That's a good thing to look at it.
Yeah, to look at the new opportunity.
Yes.
What can I do now? And one of the things that does happen in these kind of times is that, say, the cost of training might go virtually to zero. We know that some training programs have been offered for zero. Take that kind of opportunity when you can see, you know, with a bit of doubt and a bit of mentoring from older folk, you can see, right, I've got to switch, and now I'm going to switch across and take it as a positive as well, yeah.
I think it changes the phrase, well, it virtually enables the phrase, we are all in this together, so the old reaching out for the young in regard to this space.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fundamentally it, isn't it? That if we work together, and that means as a society and as a local community and as a family, we can get through this. But if we don't have that kind of support, you know, what we've seen in the past, all the research leads into this, is that if you don't have that support, and you remain unemployed for a period of time, a range of problems start to hit. So really, it's getting in there now going through these tough times, which will be around for 6 months, and seeing it through.
Fantastic. Look, great sharing with you. Thank you so very much. A very important topic, and great that we're having this conversation going across the country. Thanks to this daily program, National Talk Black. Professor, all the best to you and your team and your family. You take care, stay safe, and we'll yarn soon.
Thanks, Trevor. Great time. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Professor Paul Flatow, and he's from the Centre for Social Impact, CSI, University of Western Australia, and just talking about the youth unemployment due to COVID-19 and how it's to have significant social impact on young people for years to come. So it's in this together is the phrase they're using regarding COVID-19. So we all need to reach out, support our young ones, as Professor mentioned there. The older people further down the track can reach out for the young ones regarding their motivation and the direction, maybe a new industry, new job, if that's the case, and blessed are the flexible, but we need to adapt to the changes that are put upon us. Adaptability is it. You mob, have your say. Yana Strong, add to the conversation. National Talk Black, the deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yana with Bally One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trevor, Murray from Recovery. That's right, we're going to go to Tony. You have Tony Gibbs on the line. Tony, good afternoon. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning, yeah.
Hey, brother.
I've got a bit of a local story. I broke out the house there on Saturday and had a drive out to Palm Cove where me and her used to work, eh?
Yeah, lovely. So yeah, good travel? Good. A long time since you've been up that way?
Oh, I had to see the ocean, mate. I had to see the sea. I'm from. And, yeah, I just went over there and I finished my little production line. I can't buy any more frames. But when I was on the news on Friday, the Cairns City Council, they've approved the cutting down of that big tree, Melaleucas, out there in the front of Palm Cove.
Yeah, they're beautiful trees. And Council have cut them down, have they?
Well, they've cut one down, mate, and there was a guy arrested out there on Saturday too, and I saw the traditional owners crying for that tree on Friday on the news. And so, yeah, it's sort of in the front row, just to the right in front of the Reef House. They might want to park in Lake Paradise. I don't know what it is, but it was really good reporting because the people that watched the tree come down, they sort of looked at the cross sections and they couldn't see any rot in it or any reason to disturb it. And there was a guy arrested out there on Friday because I was talking to people I'm maybe known out there, and so I'm doing my bit and pass it on. There was someone arrested on Saturday. I don't know what the story was. I was just a casual observer trying to listen to the ocean and have it play out, you know.
So the beautiful big trees, it's probably, well, a very touristy place there at Palm Cove, and beautiful restaurants and resorts and what have you. A safety thing, but more communication is what I'm picking up from you in regard to, especially with TOs.
Yeah, well, I saw the Rikanji people, traditional owners, and I've seen destruction of all the Melaleucas at the south end of Wangetti Beach, and there was a beautiful big plum tree a little bit of the way up the beach where the hang gliders used to jump off a big sandbank there. There's a big Burdekin plum there, and a beautiful plum fall down in the sand, and they ripen beautiful in the hot sun there in the sand. And we went there one day and that tree had been burned out at the bottom because it's pretty windy. People built a fire at the base of the tree, and eventually they see that there's been a fire. And in the end, they burn it down. We went there one day and that tree had fallen over the sandbank cliff, and it was on the beach and it was like a funeral. Anyway, that's leading me to part two of the story for today, mate.
Yes.
The Cairns Council should not have approved that. Them trees are 500 years old and there's a whole line of them, and now you'll start to be able to see the paint of the results. You know, it's just terrible what's been done, and good on everybody that stood up for that tree, and I'm behind that tree. And the dead end, mate, I called the I was having a problem buying a cemetery plot next to my missus there very recently, and I called the cemeteries again this morning, and they told me the cemetery's, it's a dead end, mate. Excuse the joke. There's no one there.
Pardon the pun, but yeah, so there's option for you to purchase the plot next door to your missus?
Not so far, mate, and I find ultimate segregation. And let me get this right. And there won't be anybody there till Thursday, so the cemetery department, I don't know if they're all scrambling having meetings, because they've got to deal with this.
Pardon the punt, but it sounds like skeleton staff there.
Skeleton staff, there's none. I told you, it's a dead end.
Dead end, end, exactly.
This is the Cairns City Council again. I mean, this is really a grassroots story. I'm trying to buy a grave for myself, and I'm not allowed to do it. And it's terrible because no one else can do that except for myself. I'm not in an old folks home where I rely on other people or anything like that. I'm quite capable and I've got the cash, and they will not do it, mate. They will not.
Like I said, for the life of me, I don't know why.
Yeah, well, the ABC are listening because it's a public interest and it concerns everybody. And a lot of people buried on top of each other, and this is part of the problem. Why, if the people can't organise their graves properly, and when the time comes, and I don't know. No one should have to deal with this, you know. I've only been 6 weeks on my own here now.
Yes.
And it's terrible, and I've got to get up and it's like back to work, you know, back on your head. And I'm being productive, and I go to Palm Cove and put a bit of art out there, and I'm not selling nothing, mate. I'm just, no prices on it. I'm just talking to the public.
Good.
And if I can't, I'm talking to the public, and it's a day out, and I'm talking to people, and they like the work, and I'm not being commercial. I'm just getting the feeling for Palm Cove again. And
creating conversations, which is a beautiful thing.
That's part of selling art on the street, mate, but I don't have to sell it because I don't need the money. And I checked before I put a bit of art on a show there. I'm just that the shop, the Aboriginal art shop that used to be in Palm Cove is gone now. It's not there anymore.
Okay, rightio.
Yeah, and we used to sit outside the post office there as a little wall, and we put the rocks on it, and people didn't, if people didn't want that, or they wanted something else, boomerang or whatever, they say, well, there's a little Murray shop up there. And I don't think that fella in the shop knew what we were doing, because we only had little rocks, maybe one painting hanging on one of the Malalukas. And as far as I know, that was the people that called the police, because we was making money on the street, basically busking, you know.
Without a permit, probably, is what they were thinking, saying.
Well, permit, you know, permit. I'm not going to deal with the council, and then they'll say, oh, you go here and you do this. It's a free country, and I'll do what I want because I'm not being commercial, and that is my loophole.
Yeah, beautiful loophole like that. I'm going to go to someone, my brother. We'll talk soon, eh?
Yeah. The Palm Cove is, we don't want to see any more trees go down because people will be ready for the next.
Okay, and that's the gist of your conversation. Thank you, Tony. All the best, brother. That's Tony Gibbs there, having his say. Yarn Up Strong here in Daily Program, National Talk Black. We are going to Selwyn. Yes, good morning, brother.
I'm ready.
You there?
Yes, I'm ready.
Go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, brother. There's no racism in Australia, brother. All the Bullerman down there, where it's Captain Cook statue commemorating 250 years, all the Bullerman there, not one of there were Western Australia, where Rio Tinto blew that mine up a second place, brother.
Exactly. Point taken. Yes, I hear you.
There's no reason.
Stand up for a statue, but not for sacred site. Go figure.
Yeah, brother, that's right. Yeah. And, brother, thank you very much for last week. Good lineup, brother.
What's that?
Good lineup. The guest, brother. The good lineup.
Yeah.
Marilyn. Marion McKay, you got the last thing in Murray there.
Yes.
From WA.
Yeah.
Westmore, Morris, Bolsterham, Coco Ward, brother. I love the lineup. Marindle, brother. Marindle, good lineup, brother. And I like what, when, and you know, brother, Coco, when he was saying, I think the question was asked, what can we do? He reckoned, not what we can do, what the white fellow, we already done that, brother.
Exactly.
Brother. Yeah, brother. And Bolsterham, it answers a great question. I've got a funny feeling about Greg, you know, brother. You know, like the saying, whatever racist, but. He comes on and he says nice things, then he always have a dig at us. And I remember I was going for another one when he was at the restaurant when all the grunts were there, or the
black grunts. Yep.
But first, I want to answer this one. He said, those tortoises were good, but then they all had to upset that they have to muck everything up and do something silly, you know, some of the tortoises. Brother Bo Spurum, I like what he said. He said, we had marshals there, you know, all the marshals, they done this, they done that. And, the 1988 protest, their brother, bus security protest that marched here in Sydney. A lot of us couldn't go because they had this one up here in Townsville, the Festival of Pacific Arts, the same year. And anyway, it showed, on it shows your mentor, brother, Brother Tiger Bales, and you get a walkie-talkie talking to the other master of your brother.
Yeah.
And one of the things that people don't realize, one of the actual person of interest was a bloke, was a neo-Nazi, what I call Jack Van Tongeren. He was from Perth, and he was threatening to set up an explosion so he could illegitimize the Black Forest March. So there are marshals, and it was good that the protest was really, really good, dear brother. Thank you very much, brother.
Thank you, Salon. To Delhi. Thank you, brother. Having his say there here on your daily program, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. That number you may have to call tomorrow. I'm going to sign off here, but thank you very much for your company. Just a caption here from the Wide World Sports News. AFL star Eddie Betts says stamp out racism after revealing abhorrent racist abuse. So after the AFL made its long-awaited return on the weekend, Carlton veteran Eddie Betts has reminded people of the awful racism he still faces. With AFL teams taking a knee pre-game in solidarity of the Black Lives Matter movement and the injustice faced by Indigenous Australians, Betts provided food for thought for those still doubting the reason for such gestures calling out racism. Betts posted fresh abuse he had received this weekend, highlighting the racism that is still prevalent in Australia. A vile and blatant racist attack on Betts on Twitter depicted the three-time All-Australian as a chimpanzee. If at any time anyone is wondering why we would work so hard to bring attention to the importance of stamping out racism, this is it, Betts said in Instagram. So it's still upon us, and in regard to racism, need to stamp it out, and we all need to do our bit. You Mob, thank you very much for your company. Look, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong, and stay safe. We're not out of the woods regarding COVID-19, and we want normality back. So do what you need to do, and it's about living your life to the fullest. To Deadly Mob, and Jan Stroom, we've got the news coming up on NIRS, and thank you for joining us here on National Talk Black. Mine.